Welcome to the Emotions and Money podcast, where we unpack the psychology behind our investment decisions and why our emotions could be sabotaging our financial outcomes. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and I'm joined by Paul Nixon, who is Head of Behavioral Finance at Momentum Investments. And we're going to unpack in the series of podcasts, when it comes to investing, why it's important to understand your money emotions, and why that is even more important possibly than understanding the investment itself. So Paul, in the last two podcasts, we focused a lot on personalities, like our own personalities and how we use them to sabotage our financial goals. But of course, the best way to learn is from other people's financial mistakes. So I wanted to discuss today, you know, what we can learn from investor behavior. And you have done so much research, you've done so much analysis. If you had to kind of pull out the key basics that we can learn about improving our financial outcomes by following just these things, what would they be?
Yeah, so I think maybe the big three or the top three rules that anyone can follow would be, you know, number one, get your money to work. So if it's under the bed or under the mattress, these days we'd be careful about saying stuff under the mattress or in the couch. But anyway, get it to work. Take it from under the couch and put it to work. And I think the biggest trap there for many people is this notion of, you know, I don't have enough to invest.
True.
So I think that sort of definitely tapes onto that. So, you know, even if you've got, there are plenty of propositions out there that will give you access to micro saving. You know, even if it's just saving 10 bucks here, there, do it. Because it gets you into a good behavior as well. By the way, just on that, I often get sort of sidetracked, I sort of interrupt myself. But just with your kids, get them used to these kind of behaviors early as well. So, you know, teach them, you know, I think it's Barry and Ted Klontz, they talk about this concept of different buckets for allowances, you know. So, because remember, it's, again, your kids' first experiences with money are normally their allowance, you know. So if they're lucky enough to get one, of course. But, there should be a giving bucket, you know, because you've got to teach kids that it's good to give and to make other, you know, because it makes you feel good if you give. Teach them to save, you know, it's what are you saving for the end of the year, like hoverboard, teach them to invest, what are we saving for 5 years, and then teach them to spend and enjoy money as well. So that's maybe a little side note, but the big thing, first thing is, you know, get your money to work. Second thing is, you know, what we've always heard, don't put all your eggs in one basket. So diversify, spread your money out. There's lots to discuss here, but instead of worrying about performance of different assets, you know, rather worry about the mix of assets that you have. So, you know, when I say that, I mean the mix of stocks that you have in your portfolio versus cash and fixed income or bonds. You know, so the mix of assets is probably the most important decision that you can make, as opposed to worrying about fund A, B, or C, if we can say that. And then the last one is, and this is the most important one, just leave it alone. That's the big thing. Don't try and intervene and by the way, in that case as well, you know, if you're, I think as customers out there, we need to empower ourselves, or investors out there, we need to empower ourselves a bit more as well. So if your advisor is asking you to switch, ask why my goals haven't changed. So why am I switching? Right. So if your goals haven't changed, you shouldn't be, you know, your plan to reaching those goals shouldn't change either. So those are probably the big three. Yeah.
As you were saying, leave it alone. I was just thinking, you know, if you've got a mosquito bite or something and you keep itching it gets itchier and itchier, leave it alone. It's kind of came to mind. So let's go back. I just want to unpack some of those, you know, just so for our listeners to sort of see how can they apply that in their own day to day. And you said get your money to work, you can invest for really little. And I know this is Momentum Investments, but we are allowed to talk about other products out there. There are so many products out there that really allow you, I think of like things like Satrix, Easy Equities, that allow you to really start with as little as 50 Rand. And there is actually no excuse to not save and invest. So I think it's important to, and sometimes, and Paul, maybe this is also where financial advisor planners, it does become a problem, because they're not really going to try and, you know, not going to really help somebody who's got 100 Rand a month to invest. So some of that is a DIY thing where you've just got to go find out, you know, follow my blog, look out, you know, do some reading. But you are, you know, you can start investing. And even if it is, and it's interesting that you say about your children, I've been putting money away for my kids since they were little. But now they've got their tax-free savings account. I actually make that goes into their bank account, and it actually leaves it. So in other words, it's debit order off their bank account, because it's important for them to see that money leaving. And then they've got their short-term savings, which they have savings goals. And, you know, we set all that up. And it's really, really important. Don't just say, I don't have money, because actually there is some money that you can find and start getting comfortable with investing. But on the diversify, you know, you were saying, make sure you've got bonds. There's some people listening that are going to be sophisticated enough to understand that. Others are just going, oh, now you see, this is why I don't want to invest. You're talking about bonds and equities and all that. I don't know. So what's a simple way for somebody starting to invest to diversify?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you pick a product that would do it for you. So something like a balanced fund, for example, right? So a balanced fund by definition has a mix of things in it. So, I mean, again, if you'd look sort of back retrospectively, you know, investing in a balanced fund over a long period of time is a good investment strategy. You know, if you leave it alone, you'll find that taper comes on with most things. I say if you leave it alone. So yeah, a good way to diversify is pick a fund with a good mix of things in it, like a balanced fund, for example. Mm. And it can be really as easy as that. And by the way, if you do that and you leave it alone, you'll be outperforming a lot of other investors who don't, you know, who pay this behavior tax.
Exactly. If you leave just by leaving it alone, so you're sitting there worrying about whether you're in the best fund or not. If you just leave it alone, you will be in the best fund.
Yeah.
Because you're bypassing your own behavior of switching. Mm. And I think that's fascinating. I mean, I really, it's sort of, as we've been progressing through these podcasts, that's really come home to me, how this obsession with trying to choose the next fund, you can bypass all of that. You can improve your performance massively by choosing one and sticking with it, but making sure it's the right one. I mean, obviously investing a gold ETF or something like that, that's not a diversified investment. So, you know, you need to choose something like a balanced fund. And just for the listeners, you know, balanced fund will have, it'll have equities, South African equities, it'll have offshore equities, it'll have exposure to property, listed property, it will have bonds, it'll have cash. And I remember years ago, and I'm talking 25 years ago, listening to Piet Viljoen talking about balanced funds. And he said balanced funds on almost naturally the sell high, buy low principle, because if you think about it, a balanced fund has a mandate of a certain percentage of exposure. So it can move within those ranges, but it can't have more than, for example, 75% in equities. So when the equity markets are really running and are getting expensive, they are forced to sell out to reduce their holdings. So they will always be selling high. And then they may be then having to rebalance into weaker asset classes. So you actually, interestingly enough, a balanced fund almost gives you that kind of buy high, sell low principle. And of course, the other one that does it for you naturally is a debit order, the Rand cost averaging. And maybe that goes back to get your money to work. I mean, your Rand cost averaging, where you just put the 200 Rand away every month and you forget about it.
And then it doesn't matter if markets are up or down, because you're buying all the time. So sometimes you're going to be buying when they're down, sometimes you're going to be buying when they're up, but you know, you're not really too worried about the, you know, the intermediate fluctuations.
And it takes away behavior tax, because you know, it was very interesting. When I started investing for my son, I think we started putting 200 Rand away every month. It was into a tracker fund. So it was just tracking the Aussie. And we just kept doing that. I think somewhere along the line, we increased to 300, 400. By the time he was 12, and I remember because I was writing my book and I wrote about it, it was worth 100,000 Rand. And you know where the big kicker came in? The big kicker came in the credit crisis. Because the credit crisis, the global credit crisis, the market collapsed in 2007, 2008, and the debit order kept going off. So, and it was picking it up at 50% discount. So it's important over time that you actually have massive market collapses, because that's actually where you make your money over time, which brings back to leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
Yeah. Just keep that debit order ticking over and ticking over. Now, I wanted to also just unpack something I came across found quite interesting in your sci-fi report, that 2022 sci-fi report that Momentum Investments did. Well, you do it every year. This was the 2022 one. You actually looked at how much time do I need to be in the market to avoid market timing? So what is leaving it alone? And, you know, we always say, it's a rule of thumb is only invest in equities, so in a unit trust or buy shares or anything that's exposed to the stock market, if you have more than 5 years to invest. But you're saying that's getting longer.
Indeed. So, I mean, that's the interesting thing about this as well. We've all heard these, you know, these sort of rules of thumb that various sort of financial services providers have given us, that, you know, the minimum time, as you say. But we've seen that since 2013, 2014, you know, the market's become a lot more flat but volatile. So stock markets haven't given what they have, you know, to investors, for example, in the 90s, 2000s. We consistently, there were double-digit returns in the stock market. So, you know, from a psychology point of view, that's also quite interesting, because, you know, people have, if you look at sort of the people with money in South Africa, these are people between the age of 45 and 55, you know, 45 and older, rather, should I say. You know, these people have grown up with double-digit stock market returns. So now when they don't get them, you know, they want them, because that's the expectation, right? So we found that actually when returns dip between, when returns dip below 12%, investors are 9 times more likely to switch. Now, 12%, think about 12%, that's not a bad return.
No.
Right? So, you know, but again, sort of as it dips below 12%, investors just become more and more likely to switch. So I think
that's
it's the experience.
Anchoring. That's yeah. Anchoring. So anchoring is this concept that it's from your past. You know, that is what you expected, and that's now your benchmark, irrespective of all the things that have changed around that.
Exactly. And I mean, if you think about it, there's always something shooting the lights out, right? So when you've got that 12%, there will always be something that will have performed better, right? Because that's just the way stuff works. I mean, I remember going out on these due diligence things with, you know, with in my previous life, and the most fascinating thing was, you know, you'd get to one fund manager and they'd be like, MTN is the best. And they'd give you this whole long list of reasons, and you literally go to the next one and they're like, MTN's the worst. You know, it's just a view, right?
I sat at an investment conference and they had 4 asset managers up there, and they each asked them their opinion on NASPERS. I wish, for goodness sake, I still had notes on who said what. All 4 said something totally different.
Exactly.
One was right.
But that's the thing. That
25%. Exactly. Like, that's your chance.
And these strategies don't persist for a long period of time. So if you look at these very interesting diagrams called Smarty Boxes, I mean, if you just take any assets, like, you know, we talked about stocks, cash, bonds, for example, and you look at the performance over time, the picture, and you give them a different color, it looks like a Smarty Box, because no one of those actually performs consistently at the top. You know, so although equities are more risky, should give you better returns over time, in any given year it might be at the bottom. You know, so these things are just part of the kind of psychology of investing, and it sort of perpetuates this behavior again: expectations, attitudes, values. What's formed your belief about the way the world works, and eventually that translates, given an emotional trigger, into behavior.
We spoke in the last podcast about the psychology of money, and Morgan Housel does actually talk about that as well. He said, you know, people from, you know, there's some people are gold investors because that was at a time that there was rapid inflation and gold was a hedge. And I'm certainly of the equity age. I was informed in the late 90s and early 2000s, when equities were really booming. So just interesting. And again, just check in on your biases all the time. COVID. I want to talk to you a little bit about COVID and our, investment behavior. Has there been a shift? So, you know, you've looked at this analysis about how people behave and how they change their behavior. And I suppose you've alluded to a little bit, saying lower returns, people are still adjusting to the concept. But has behavior changed since COVID? Less behavior.
Very much so. So we and this is not just in South Africa. This is globally. You can see a definite trend that there's been increased digital adoption. I mean, I remember just before COVID, I mean, people used to try and get me to attend Zoom meetings, and I was like, oh, it's such a mission. You know, I've got to learn something new. And now all of a sudden, 2 years later, I mean, the rest is history, right? So it's there's been massive acceleration of digital adoption, but of course that's now, you know, everyone has access to their portfolios on their phones, or at least many of us do. So we get access to the numbers, we've got this information that's kind of thrown at us all the time. We've spoken about attention, you know, kind of things that sort of salient to us. So we've seen that people are more engaged, they are switching more than they ever have before. You know, what we call active investors are those who have made at least one switch. That's been up since COVID of, you know, 80% and 50% in 2021. So people are more engaged, they've got more access to their investment balances. And I think over time, that's definitely a threat to the financial advisor as well, because people are gaining this overconfidence. Think about overconfidence again. You know, there's plenty of information out there. You know, I mean, whether you believe in a vaccine or not, there's information to support your belief system, right? Any belief system you have on crypto, vaccines, equities, any stock.
You'll find someone to agree with you.
You'll find someone, and a scientist, by the way. So someone with a PhD or something is, you know, you'll find someone like that. So So those that sort of cocktail of things has made it has made sort of a more fertile environment for a behavior tax.
So it's actually got worse. The behavior tax is going to possibly trend higher going forward, because we think, again, right in the first podcast, we spoke about behavior tax, we spoke about overconfidence. So now we're being given this information. It is remarkable. And I, you know, Paul, I'm thinking so much back. So please, if you didn't listen to the first podcast, please go back and listen to it, because we also spoke about the shortcuts we want to make. So we've now got little 2-minute YouTube clips telling us what to do with our money.
FinTok,
you know, TikTok telling us what to do with our money. So, so all of this, we're being bombarded with all of this information, and it's all very shortcut stuff.
But also it's amplified, right?
So, and it's amplified.
So I mean, people don't get views on FinTok or TikTok, you know, if it's not saying, extreme, right?
Yeah. So Simon Brown
take
and
a balanced
I
were, view.
You know, Simon Brown, one lap, you know, he said, Jemai, if I wanted to write his best selling book, I would make it Get Rich Quick. He said the book should be Get Rich Slowly. But you'll never get YouTube view or TikTok view if you said get rich. It's like 5 ways to be a millionaire now will get you the views.
Exactly.
So it's also that, and you know, talking about that, you actually said something earlier when we were having coffee before this podcast. You said, Maya, have you noticed that there was a certain radio station, shall remain unmentioned, who used to always quote the Bitcoin price and isn't anymore?
Yeah.
And isn't that another fad that comes in and out?
Exactly. So I mean, when we had the whole, you know, FTX debacle, Sam Bankman-Fried, whatever his name is, I mean, people were, you know, again, these people were coming out of the woodwork and saying, "I told you never to buy crypto. I told you never to do this." And sort of, we had on the morning news, you had the Bitcoin price. That's the first time I'd heard that. And now it's just disappeared. You know, so exactly. I mean, this is, you know, sort of this. There's this kind of sensationalized idea of a lot of these things, and that's what people want to hear. And people want to be right as well, by the way. So there's ego there as well. So, you know, you've got to say, everyone's got a self-image, and if that self-image is built on being right, you want to be right.
And also the doubling down on it.
Sure.
So, and I'm just as bad. I'm not saying we all are. But if you've taken a line and you're consistently being proven wrong, you're going to keep doubling down, saying yes, but it's going to, and you'll find reasons to justify your position rather than going back and questioning the integrity of the original argument. And I think that is really important work to do as an investor, is to go back and have the guts to say, oops, I made a mistake, because now when I look at the data or the information, I realize I had a bias, there was something else going on, you know, or you just stick with your line and hope for the best.
Like Bill Clinton did, you just keep on doubling down until,
You just double down. We're very good at double down. In fact, there's amazing podcasts about that and how people will even lie under oath rather than have be shamefaced for
loss
being wrong.
It's just another
loss aversion, being wrong. We don't like being wrong. It's like it's almost like public humiliation to be wrong. And I think there was a lot about the about that in COVID as well. But I just before we end off, I wanted to go back to the role of the advisor. I mean, you went back to, you don't need a lot to start. Just, you know, put your money away, which advisors aren't always great with. Diversify, but leave it alone. So how can an advisor in this market that you're telling me about, that they're up against TikTok and your their friends' investments, you know, Ponzi schemes are huge. They are absolutely massive at the moment. How do they get their client to remain invested?
Look, so I mean, first of all, I mean, we need to acknowledge that that's not an easy job. You know, I think that it is possible, though, but it requires work. I mean, that's the big issue here, is that, I mean, if you think of people, a couple going through marital problems, for example, right? It doesn't help if you go to therapy if one, actually both of them, are not willing to do some work. You know, it's going to take stuff that is difficult, and it's probably against what you instinctively want to do, but it involves work, right? That's the big thing. So. From a financial market perspective, you know, if you're going to wait until a market downturn before you have a discussion with your client about what they're going to do, you know, their emotion, we've already discussed how powerful that is probably going to drive that behavior. And I mean, of course, we know, right? If you've ever been involved in a relationship, I mean, what is the one thing you don't say to people when you're in a heated argument? Calm down or relax. Right?
That never ends well. You never ever tell me to calm down or relax when I'm heated. That is like a red button.
The biggest trigger. It's
the biggest trigger for me.
So what's happening in that state is, if your client is coming at you with, you know, markets are down, I need to do something, and you're like, just calm down, that's the right thing to say, but not the right thing to say.
So
you know, what you need to do then is you need to, there are techniques in financial therapy, for example, where you would develop a stress inoculation plan. And basically what that means is get the client to vision, or rather get to sort of sort of come up with a vision of what the future might look like or what they might do when financial markets inevitably wobble, and get them to write down and commit to, you know, a plan. So next time markets crash, I will wait for, you know, X amount of time before I make a decision. And these kind of things, by the way, just as human beings, we feel already better once we start to plan for things. So in other words, the chances of people getting triggered when that eventual event happens are less when they start using these techniques. And by the way, the interesting thing about this as well is, I mean, you know, think techniques like journaling, for example, are many very, very successful asset managers I know use it as well. So they try and make themselves, you know, things like mindfulness, for example, be aware of the state that you're in, the emotive state that you're in before you make reactive decisions. And, you know, life hacks like the time of day, right? So, I mean, you should be making important decisions, you know, in the morning, not in the afternoon. So we spoke about that emotional capital. You know, it takes time and work and cognitive power to, you know,
before
to make
after
decisions.
Coffee.
Always after coffee.
Always after coffee.
So yes, absolutely. We should be, you know, these are some of the techniques in financial therapy that advisors are starting to accumulate that is going to, I think, give them a shield against things like, you know, artificial intelligence, which is obviously a hot topic at the moment as well.
Yeah, maybe something we'll need to be talking about, Chat GPT and what that means for advice going forward and the biases that are inherent in artificial intelligence. Very important topic, I think. But Paul, once again, I mean, you and I could just keep talking and talking. I find this absolutely fascinating. But again, goes back to my personality type, which we discussed in a previous podcast. So, and to our listeners, I hope you've been enjoying this. And if you're new to this podcast, please go back to the first two that we've recorded, because it'll help you a lot, understand a lot of where we're going, and perhaps give you a little bit of insight into who you are as a person. But in our next podcast, please join us, because we're going to look at the different types of investment risks and how your personality, once again, influences the risks that you are prepared to take. So thank you, Paul. Looking forward to chatting again.
Look forward to chatting. Thanks, Maya.